on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Friday, June 27th, 2025. And I know this sounds pretty crazy, but this is the last Friday in the first half of 2025. It's the second to last trading day of the first half of the year. And frankly, I don't know where all the time has gone. It seemed like just yesterday, I was attempting to stay awake on New Year's, but falling asleep on my couch and briefly waking up to see fireworks. And here we are, already halfway through the year. And certainly, H1 2025 has been eventful. And perhaps it is poetic that near the end of the first half, after the volatility, we end at record highs. But to see where we are is to ignore the journey and to understand how important it is to see what is going on a broad lens and not just take a snapshot in time. And so we here at Invest Talk are here each and every day through the first half of the year, and we promise through the next 6 months as well. And when we do this show, this radio program, this YouTube series, this podcast, our goal is to help make you a better and more informed investor. We do that with our main focus points, which we bring to the table every day. We try and touch on as many stories as possible, but that also depends on how many questions you have, because the most important part of this show is your finance and investment questions. And to that end, before we talk about today's market performance, before we run down those show topics for you, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, guys. A great show. I just wondered what you thought of PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund just as a dividend play. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Thank you.
So the PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund, ticker PDI, is exactly that. It is a fund whose primary objective is income. Even says it right here, their secondary objective is capital appreciation. It's a bond fund. It invests only in bonds and futures related to bonds, I believe. Now, it looks like they have a little bit of equity future exposure as well. But primarily, it is investing in fixed income, right? And the way it is doing it in a levered way. That's why if you look at this thing right here, this asset allocation, it's showing you 141% fixed income. How do they get that? Well, they do it by levering the fund. And so because of that, it can become very sensitive to interest rate movements. Bonds are inherently sensitive, right? If yields go down, then current bonds prices appreciate because the coupon's higher than on the run bonds now. Vice versa, if yields go up, current bond prices tend to go down. And so this fund, who again, whose primary purpose is income, usually achieves a 13 to 15% dividend yield right now. Its last 12-month distribution yield was about 15.68%. And so if you're looking for primarily getting this type of income yield, this is a decent way to do it, albeit an expensive way to do it, right? Management fee is about 1.1% right here. But again, you have to understand with this fund the risks. The risk of leverage, the risk of rates moving against you. If you're willing to stomach that risk, if what you are trying to get is this kind of yield, if your secondary focus is capital appreciation, and you don't mind paying a 1.1% basis or 1.1% management fee, well, then the PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund might be for you. Thanks for the call. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic. Will housing prices drop? 2025 outlook as home inventory rises. U.S. home inventory has climbed nearly 20% year over year, and forecasts now suggest national home prices will either remain flat or see a slight decline over the next 12 months. We'll also touch on the news we got halfway through the trading day that the president has terminated trade talks with Canada. What could that mean for the broader trade picture? We'll also touch on new funds that bring in investors by promising huge payouts, but you can't look at anything without understanding the risks. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll look at how long-term bond funds are seeing a bit of an exodus as more and more fear about the U.S. loading up on debt. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on Novo Nordisk and one on Oscar Health. We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're headed into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk briefly about today's market activity and tackle more of your questions from the InvestTalk Anytime listener line. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Grainger Incorporated.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The market is starting to price in an increasing likelihood that General Mills is just headed for bankruptcy.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code INVEST for 15% off.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a look at the market today. U.S. stocks finished higher overall. It was a choppy trading day, somewhat sharply rebounded off of those session lows in about the last hour of trading. Dow finished up 1%, S&P 500 up 52 basis points, NASDAQ up exactly the same, 52 basis points. Small caps pretty flat on the day, up just about 2 basis points. S&P 500 and NASDAQ logging fresh record highs, while major indices posting pretty much across the board strong weekly gains. Outperformers included some apparel names, Nike doing well, aerospace, home builders. Looks like airlines and asset managers, some of the best performers on the day. Big tech, mostly better, though Tesla, a notable underperformer. And in terms of the worst performers, well, energy, biotech, banks, semis, restaurants, and copper. Treasuries a bit weaker across the board. Dollar index up to 20 basis points on the day. Gold finishing down 1.8%, though, off of their worst levels. And crude oil finishing the day positive, up 40 basis points in overall was a pretty volatile session. And so what really drove a lot of the market activity today and what drove the drawdown midway through the day was the announcement that the president was terminating trade talks with Canada in response to a digital service tax. And so how that's going to manifest itself, according to President Trump, is that within the next week, Canada will be notified of the tariff rate. Treasury Secretary Bessent also signaling on the trade front a bit more flexibility, saying the most important deals should be concluded by Labor Day versus the original self-imposed July 9th hard line. Thus far, the 90 deals in 90 days, certainly not manifesting itself. Fiscal policy, another focus. The Treasury Secretary also asking Congress to remove Section 899 language, something we talked about. I think actually I talked about it last Friday, maybe, after coming to an agreement with G7 partners. Timing of the reconciliation bill, still a lot of questions there. Senate GOP been contending with an unfavorable ruling from the Senate parliamentarian. Factions wanting different things, oftentimes competing things, really holding up this bill. So honestly, looking unlikely that they may get a vote that the president wants by the July 4th holiday. From a macro perspective, May core PCE up about 20 basis points month over month, slightly hotter than the 10 basis point consensus, and also the 10 basis points that we saw in April. Personal income and personal spending also both down month over month versus the forecast of 30 basis point gains. Final June Michigan consumer sentiment came in a bit better than expected, with the 1 and 5 year inflation expectations ticking down just slightly versus what we saw from the flash read. Decently busy week next week in terms of data. And it is also, as I'm sure all of you American listeners are aware, a shortened week as the July 4th holiday will see the market closed. And I could be mistaken, but maybe July 3rd is also a shortened day in terms of trading. But we're also going to see June payrolls on that day as well. We are expecting to slow to 125,000 from the 140,000 in May. All righty, let's keep things moving and get to a question from our YouTube channel. This one from Martin Cerna, and it's on ticker BN. It says, what is your analysis on BN, a company that seems to have a good growth outlook and is all actively repurchasing shares? Well, BN is a Brookfield Corporation. And Brookfield Corporation is a global alternative asset manager and big investor within real estate. About 48% of their revenue comes from private equity investments, about 25% from infrastructure, about 11.7% comes from other asset management services. Now, in May of 2025, the company reported a 27% increase in distributable earnings, something that investors certainly like. It's one of the reasons why over the past 3 months, they're up 8.96%. Over the past 52 weeks, up 48.22%. Not only do they have some pretty strong financial performance, well, the valuations aren't too bad here, right? They trade about 14.7 times forward-looking earnings. It's slightly above the five-year average, trading about 2.1 times price to book value. But here's a couple of things you want to consider, right? Rising in interest rates or slowing macro growth could really pressure valuations here and pressure what has historically, or rather what has been over the past quarter or so, decent returns to investors. Share buybacks are also things that tend to be temporary, right? You approve a certain amount of share buybacks within a program, and so that program could at some point expire. Now, it pays about a 59 basis point dividend yield. Its cash flow looks pretty solid. It does have a bit of debt, $249 billion in debt, On a $100 billion market cap company, its interest coverage ratio is sitting at about just 1.05. And so there's not a lot of room, not a lot of wiggle room here. Should things turn south for the company from a financial perspective, net margin also very low, profitability pretty low. It's probably trading at or about a fair value here, I would say. Honestly, you know, in spite of recent positive performance, in spite of a big run-up here, I'm a little worried about the leverage within their balance sheet. And so if you're looking to see if you're looking for private equity and real estate exposure, I would probably go towards a company that has a little bit more wiggle room on their balance sheet should things turn south, because these names tend to be, again, very sensitive towards capital flows, understandably, and very sensitive towards rates as well. That is Brookfield Corporation, ticker BN. All right, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. This week in the KPP Insight section, we discussed the current market environment. Certainly a lot to update there. Stock ideas section, we mentioned a consumer electronics company and an IT consulting firm. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on quarterly earnings report analysis. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday afternoons. One other thing I want to mention is something we've said over the past couple weeks, and that is we launched the InvestTalk store. It is the place for any fan of InvestTalk to rep the show. I certainly do it every day on our YouTube wearing this polo. I do go out into the world wearing my bucket hat and my sweatshirt as well. We have normal hats. We have mugs. If you have a suggestion on what kind of merch you may want, shoot us an email. Go over to, leave us a question over on our YouTube. Anything that would be interesting to you. The goal isn't to make money here. It's just to show the love for this program and to really expand our family as much as we can. If that's interesting to you, head over to investtalkstore.com. All right, we're moving into a break. Still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions. Hopefully a live one. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about a hot topic in most people's lives, and that is the housing market. More specifically, when will housing prices drop? So in order to understand this, let's take a look at the most recent numbers. Homes spent about 51 days on the market in the month of May. That is 6 more days than the same month in the previous year, and suggesting a bit of a slowdown, though a slowdown that is moving things more back towards the pre-pandemic norm. The median sale price for a house, $440,000, showing about a 60 basis point year-over-year growth. Inventory starting to improve a little bit. More listings are helping to reduce competition, but total housing supply and certainly the amount of houses that are being built still is below pre-pandemic levels, meaning that there still can't be a lot of alleviation towards some of these cost pressures with the housing market broadly. And then another thing, rates are still high. Many homeowners are unwilling to trade those 3% mortgages for something closer to 6.5, 7, certainly not a trade that I would want to make. And for now, despite cutting rates in late 2024, the Fed is holding rates steady. Now, there seems to be a bit of an internal schism in the Fed between some governors who are more ready for rate cuts, some that are more willing to pause, but it could be possible that we start to see cuts as soon as the July meeting. New home permits and completions are down from last year. Builders fear repeating the inventory overhang from 2020, making their companies less profitable. And so with all of these things, you can understand that what is driving any market. What drives any market? Supply and demand. There doesn't seem to be a situation where builders are comfortable building as many homes. Now, demand is falling, but is it enough to wriggle away from some of these massive price increases that we've seen over the past 5 years? Well, without a major rate decline, without a surge in housing supply, that seems to be unlikely. Broad home price declines across the board. Now, I'm not saying that isn't necessarily going to happen regionally, but across the board, not really expected this year. And so with that in mind, like, what is the advice for somebody who is searching for a home? Well, one thing that you could do is you could buy now, hoping rates drop later, and then refinance. Now, for somebody who did that in 2024, the beginning of 2024, assuming that by 2025 rates would be lower, thus far they had been out of luck. There is risk in that strategy. Nobody can perfectly predict where rates are going to go because it is a dynamic market. Another thing, smaller. Start smaller. Condos, tiny homes. Explore more cost-effective modular housing. I saw a chart maybe about a month ago that showed this is the most expensive time to buy a home relative to income since about 1890, which is as far back as the data goes. And so certainly if you don't have the need for a home, if you're just thinking of it, as we tell you never to think of it, as an investment, you would be buying the highest that high has ever been high. Overall, the 2025 outlook is pretty mixed. It may offer gradual improvement in affordability, but the key drivers of what has made the housing market expensive are still there. Understanding that with anything, timing is difficult. Honestly, the best thing you can do is wait for more recovery. Alrighty, let's keep things moving and play a listener question now.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm calling to ask about Halliburton. It seems to be undervalued compared to its competitors from just a price-to-earnings perspective. Would be looking to pick some up in my retirement account to hold for the long haul. Wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Thanks for what you do. Bye.
Alrighty, let's take a look at Halliburton, ticker H-A-L. Halliburton is a drilling company. They drill, baby, drill. And it is within the energy, oil, and commodity space. Their drilling and evaluation makes about 42% of their business. Their completion and production aspect makes up about 58% of their business. Year to date, down 24.35% over the past 52 weeks, down 38.80%. Certainly not good performance over the short term. But you know what? The oil broadly is down. But they've also had a pretty rough past 3 years relative to their competition. Now, in spite of that, they have been buying back shares. Cash flow has grown at a positive rate. Earnings are still positive. Margins set to fall from the 2023 highs. And revenue growth has all but gone negative. In fact, it has gone negative. Reached a peak in 2023, about $23 billion, down to about $21.17 billion now. One thing I would say about this name is earnings are due in just over 3 weeks. It has a pretty challenging macro backdrop, right? Revenue is falling, earnings are declining. They declined in the previous quarter. Certainly investors don't like that. And frankly, in the short to medium term, I don't really see any reprieve there. As a long-term play, it may be a good value here because it's trading at 8.3 times forward-looking earnings. But frankly, there's no catalyst that I see in the short term to break these trends. And you may see more downward movement after these earnings on July 22nd. That is ticker HAL. Thanks for the call. Head a new break, and I am excited to take some of your live calls. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at investtalkstore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. Ticker symbol NVO, Novo Nordisk. It's a Danish company. It's listed in NASDAQ as well, I think. I think I'll buy a small portion very soon. It's very, very down this year, and there's been a change of CEO announced. And I was wondering what you think of this compared to the main competitor, the American Eli Lilly. I believe Novo Nordisk is a very strong company. They have these weight loss blockbuster drugs out these recent years. It seems to me it's undervalued. I'd sure like to hear your opinion. Thank you. This is Yannick from Denmark. Bye.
Novo Nordisk, ticker NVO, is a pharmaceutical giant, a Danish pharmaceutical giant who specializes in diabetes and obesity therapy. You have likely heard of their blockbuster drug Ozempic, which has been wildly popular, as well as Wegovy. They have a pretty decent pipeline, all within the GLP-1 space. And, you know, they are currently testing a high-dose Wegovy with some success thus far, right? Some seeing as much as, you know, a third of patients achieving about 25% or greater in weight loss. Now, the chart looks pretty bad, right? It's down 52.59% over the past 52 weeks, down 20.36% year to date. And in spite of what I'm about to read to you right here, Q1 2025, revenue growth up 20% year over year, beating consensus. Wegovy sales up 13%, beating consensus. Ozempic sales up 24%, beating forecasts. Outlook revised upward, slightly lower. And so, you know, looking at these numbers, right, they're beating consensus across the board. Their revenue growth exploded. This is a $300 billion company who has 20% growth year over year on an annualized basis, going back to 2019. Their margins, upwards of 30%, supposed to be 35% this year. They don't have much debt, about $14 billion in debt. Their cash flow looks fantastic, and slight correction, it's $227 billion US dollars market cap. They buy back shares. They have a dividend yield. So what's going on with this chart? Well, the answer is, I would say multi-pronged here, right? You have growing competition from a company that's mentioned, Eli Lilly. You have patents that will expire between 2026 and 2031. You have U.S. regulatory scrutiny on drug pricing, which has always been an overhang. It's been an overhang for quite some time. But you have a president who is more willing to use a hammer on foreign goods, specifically pharmaceuticals, and seems justifiably upset that Americans pay more than any other country. And so because of that, you see this valuation drop to a point where forward-looking earnings is pretty reasonable, 15.5. Its average over the past 5 years has been 27 times. Its high has been 39. It's near its lows right now. From a technical momentum basis, I mean, there's nothing to show that this is reversing here. They do have earnings that are about a month away. But I think this is a pretty decent value proposition for a company, the likes of which it hasn't really seen in quite some time. The growth is still there. And so if you want to make a bet on this name, I think that's perfectly reasonable, because should its high dose Wegovy get approved, that could give it another dominant spot in a largely growing market. And so at a pretty decent valuation, I think it's a decent position to take. Novo Nordisk, ticker NVO. All right, it is Friday. I know I say that often on Fridays, and I don't have to remind anybody that it is Friday, but I'll do it again. It is Friday. And on Friday, we generally make some time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. The 2-year Treasury yield was at 3.744% today. For perspective, last week it was 3.899, and 184 weeks ago it was 0.64. The 10-year Treasury yield was at 4.287% today. Last week that number was 4.375, 46 weeks ago that number was 3.921, and 86 weeks ago that number was 4.63. Gold was priced at $3,272 per ounce today. That is a $98 decrease compared with last week. 85 weeks back, that number was 1935, and 174 weeks ago, that number was 1806. Silver, priced at $36.03 today, a 1 cent increase compared with last week. 72 weeks ago, that number was 2280, and 166 weeks back, that number was 2394. Oil was selling for $65.55 per barrel today, a $9.45 decrease, pretty sharp decrease compared to the last week. 40 weeks ago, that number was $67.79. 82 weeks back, that number was $74.30. And 182 weeks ago, that number was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.20 per gallon, a 1 cent decrease from last week. 108 weeks ago, that number was $3.56. 156 weeks back, so that number was $4.25. And 176 weeks ago, that number was $3.57. In California, it was averaging $4.61 per gallon, 4 cents lower than last week. 86 weeks ago, that number was $5.32, and 162 weeks back, $5.87. For comparison, in North Carolina, gas was averaging $2.95 per gallon today, a $1.66 less than gas in California. Now, if you're paying attention to the market throughout the day, you probably saw that the president abruptly terminated trade negotiations with Canada over its new digital services tax on U.S. tech firms. And so what is this tax? Well, this tax targets revenue from Canadian users and includes retroactive taxation payments going back to 2022 that is estimated to potentially cost U.S. tech firms over $3 billion. Now, the Prime Minister of Canada, Mark Carney, insists that Canada will not scrap this tax, saying the country is not for sale and will act in Canadians' best interest. And before this, right, no warning was given to the Canadian trade delegation, let alone the U.S. Trade delegation, without, it was, as is often the case from this administration, a decision that was made and announced on Truth Social, escalating tensions after a recent G7 clash over dairy and tech policy. Treasury Secretary Bessent, hinted that the U.S. could launch a formal trade investigation into Canada's practices. Now, at home, the tech lobby, lobbyists from the tech industry certainly are happy. Meta, Google praised the administration's swift retaliation, having pressured DC for many, many months. And for context, right, Canada already is facing steep U.S. tariffs on steel, on aluminum, on autos, and on any goods deemed non-compliant with the USMCA, which is the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Canada sends about 75% of its exports to the United States, and trade accounts for roughly 20% of its GDP, meaning that any differences in trade caused by these barriers, i.e. U.S. consumers paying more to import Canadian goods, could be economically risky for our neighbors to the north. And this is while, this all happened while negotiations were ongoing, right? Carney and Trump had set a 30-day deadline for resolving disputes, and negotiators had met 7 times in 2 weeks. And in spite of all this, negotiations were blown up on Truth Social. And so because of this, right, the market did fall a little bit. It did sense a rebound after that. And so with all of this, right, the future of the USMCA, a trade deal signed by the president himself in his first administration, is in limbo. Canada had hoped to defer digital tax talks to the next renegotiation, but Trump's move may now upend the timetable entirely and puts trade between the U.S. and its neighbor, one of its largest trading partners, into a deeper era of uncertainty. Let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank and answer this question that came in earlier.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I want to look into stock ticker Oscar Health, OSCR. Looking to put it in my growth portfolio, just a very small position. Just wanted to know what you think of this. Just a couple of things of what you would look at for a growth stock. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Bye.
Alrighty. Oscar Health. Oscar Health is a healthcare company. It's had quite the year this year. It's up about 51.86% year to date, up 51.41% over the past 3 months. Over the past 52 weeks, up 15%, though still down from its IPO price back in 2021. So what does this company do? Well, it's a health insurance company. It serves customers through a tech platform. It offers individual, family, small group, and medical advantage, Medicare Advantage plans through its tech platform, and it is headquartered in New York. Now, it's a fairly small company, about $6 billion market cap. And its growth is pretty phenomenal, right? It's year-over-year growth from 469 net interest earned to about $10 billion is where it's projected to be this year. Net income, positive for the first time in 2024, growing from $25 million last year to $225 million this year. Cash on hand, a lot of cash on hand. Cash flow looks pretty phenomenal. Again, margins turning positive for the first time. The chart, massive price increase since April on the back of some pretty positive earnings, right? Surging growth in individual and small group membership, strong bottom line and EBITDA performance, all propelling this stock upward to a point where it's now trading at 25.7 times forward-looking earnings. And I might add, a lot of this is probably due to market dynamics as well. It's got about 16.83% short interest out there. And so a little bit of a squeeze certainly helped this company. I know it is a retail favorite. One thing that worries me more than anything, they issue a lot of shares, up from 210 million to 250 million in just 4 years. Bottom line, rapid revenue growth, rapid member growth, you know, strong Q1 results. But I still remain pretty cautious here, right? You're at a point where you're now making 225 million. Revenue is looking pretty solid, pretty juicy in terms of growth. Can the business scale? Is a company that has appreciated this quickly in the past 3-6 months, can it scale? It's trading at 25.7 times forward-looking earnings here. Consensus hold rating, I tend to agree. I think it's a little bit overvalued here, given that we just don't know. Can it keep up with this massive growth as it's had? Obviously, congratulations to the company, but investing is also about that downside risk as well. And so a name that is propelled a lot by retail investors, has a lot of short interest out there, a lot of risks. I would stay out for now. That is Oscar Health, ticker OSCR. Righty, let's keep things moving, head back to the InvestTalk YouTube question bank and get a question that was submitted earlier on KKR. It says, what are your thoughts on KKR for long-term investment? KKR & Co. is a private equity firm. It's an investment manager. They make about 67% of their revenue from their investment from their insurance business, about 33% from their asset management. Year to date, it's down 9.21%. Over the past year, it's up 28.86%. Let's pull something up here on my other screen. All right, let's take a look at revenue. Revenue has grown pretty significantly from December 2022, though dropping off to about $7.8 billion. Next year, margins exactly where you'd expect them to be with an asset management firm. Net margin projected to be 56.6% this year. Now, from a earnings multiple basis, it's trading about 22.5 times forward-looking earnings, above its five-year average, price to book about 4.7 times right now. They've been doing some acquisitions, which have certainly helped the business grow a bit in terms of their private equity portfolio. Their insurance fundamentals still looking pretty strong. Again, insurance making up about 67% of their business. The deal flow certainly not drying up within the private equity space as well. In terms of debt, they have about $51 billion of debt on a $117 billion market cap business, but cash flow looks great. Profitability is headed in the right direction. They have had a drawdown since the beginning of the year. And so this is going to be a name that's particularly sensitive to interest rates just because a lot of their buyouts are going to be leverage buyouts, debt focused. It's trying to break out to the upside above that 130 range here, but still looking a little bit expensive. Even though you're getting those great margins, 56.6 times, it's headed towards the upper end of its range. And so the question remains, right? Is it going to claw back what it has lost? I think out of all the asset managers within the private equity space, KKR is one of the better ones, especially because their insurance business makes up a good portion of their revenue and doesn't have many headwinds on the horizon. So if you were looking to get into KKR, given this recent price appreciation in the past 3 months or so, I'd probably start to enter a position slowly. Great business, great cash flow, solid all around. That is KKR and Company Inc., ticker KKR. Alrighty, this is Invest Talk. I'm Lou Guerra. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break. So if you had a question, please get it in now. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Longtime listener here from the Midwest. I have a quick question for you. I know you've been suggesting funds and stuff and stocks in the industrial sectors and also in defensive and that. Done some research and I found a couple ones that I'm wondering if you guys would give a thumbs up to. I found VIS and also, what is it here, ITA. I was wondering if the holdings in these two ETFs seem to be pretty solid, stable for the future, and their past also seems to have great results. But I was wondering if you guys would be willing to give them a thumbs up for a future outlook and if they'd fit nicely into a portfolio to help diversify it. Thank you. We'll be listening on the show. Have a good day.
Okay, let's take a look at these two ETFs. One is the Vanguard Industrial ETF. It is a pure play exposure to industrial companies with an all cap exposure that reaches all the way down to the smallest of the small microcaps. And so its target universe is the MSCI USA IMI with a GICS sector classification of industrials. It is passively managed. I imagine it is market cap weighted. And so the first thing I would hope for is it being relatively inexpensive. And it is about 9 basis point expense ratio. Now you are going to see, like I said, all the way from large caps, which make up about 81% of the fund, all the way down to those tiny, tiny, tiny micro caps, about 20 basis points of this fund. The largest names are the largest names within the industrial space. GE Aerospace, RTX Corporation, Caterpillar. It is pretty broadly diversified. It holds 393 names. Top 10 only makes up 27.85% of this ETF. Now, compare that to the other one, which is ITA US. That's a little bit different, right? This is the iShares US Aerospace and Defense ETF. So it is a market cap weighted index as well of US listed manufacturers, assemblers, and distributors of aircraft and aircraft parts, primarily used in commercial and private aviation. As such, it's also tracking the MSCI, USA IMI, but specifically the aerospace and defense, which means it's probably going to be more expensive because it is more specialized, which it is, 40 basis points. My other guess before looking at it is it's going to be far more concentrated, though you may see some of the similar names. And because it's just a sub-industry, it's probably going to have fewer names as well. Alrighty, let's look. 85% of it is large caps. They do hold some micro caps as well. And look at that, only 40 holdings. The top 10 makes up 75.56% of the entire ETF, 20% in GE Aerospace, 14.7% in RTX Corporation, nearly 9% in Boeing. And so from my perspective, does it make sense to buy into an ETF that only has 40 holdings, that is market cap weighted? There's no complexity here in how it's built. And it's built such that 3/4 of it is just these 10 names. If you wanted to hold this ETF, you could just construct it yourself, save yourself the 40 basis points. And so from the second answer on ITA, I think it's fine. I think that aerospace and defense, especially thematically, is a good road to go down. But I just think spending 40 basis points for a fund that is not complex and market cap weighted, that most of the weight is in 10 names and only holds 40 in general, maybe not the best way to go. Now, on the other hand, this is different. This is you're overweighting industrials, which year to date up 9.23%, 1 year up 19.22%. We like where the valuations are for a lot of industrial names, especially given the 3 year performance. And so if you wanted to get broad-based exposure to industrials, this is a great way to go about it, right? More names, more broadly diversified. Doesn't make sense for you to try and hold 393 names, certainly. And it's only 9 basis points. So I like where your head is. I think industrials is a good place to be. And if you're looking to get that industrial exposure, the Vanguard Industrials ETF is a good way to do it. Thanks for the call. Well, that completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for watching, listening each and every day. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. The only way to grow this family is to grow it together. So Justin and I would really appreciate just tell one person to start downloading InvestTalk. And if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements, how they all come together, and you haven't had a financial checkup in a while, which just like a health checkup, you should do each and every year, head over to KPP. We offer no-cost, free portfolio reviews, no obligations. It all starts at investtalk.com. Just click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night. Enjoy.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.